How many of you heard the Scopes Monkey trial on KPCC last night? Okay. It was a nice piece of serendipity, of synchronicity, that they were dealing again with the Scopes trial. What a tragedy that it's relevant. When I first saw Inherit the Wind, and I knew the author of Inherit the Wind, Robert Lee, it was a wonderful period piece. These clowns back in the 20s, somewhere in the middle of the country where education had never reached, were doing... Oh, some of you are from there? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, never penetrated. Were questioning evolution, but then as I started studying it, I found out, well, no, most of them weren't. Most of the people who were involved in the Scopes monkey trial were making monkeys out of their own constituents because they didn't believe in the case that they were bringing. The majority of the people who were involved in trying to outlaw the teaching, and it actually doesn't say the teaching of evolution, it was the teaching of any system that denies the biblical teaching, which still would give you room to teach evolution, but it might not give you room to teach a Bible class if it's not from the right brand. But most of them believed in evolution. Most of them thought that the law would never get, in fact, tried. That they did it, they passed this law as a way of condescending to the great unwashed. In fact, the people who passed the law forbidding the teaching of a system that denied the biblical story were people who had no respect for the people whom they represented. And they passed this law to, as we say today, just pander to them. And they assumed that it would never get tried. That this was just, oh, you can pass it, you can sign it. It'll just make them happy. It's kind of like flag burning initiatives and flag burning constitutional amendments. I mean, nobody really thinks stuff like that through. If a flag is old and tired, what is the only legal way of disposing of an American flag? Burning it. Okay, so there goes your flag burn, you know. They don't think this stuff through. The Scopes trial happened because some people wanted to test it, not because a bunch of fundamentalist politicians actually believed what it was that they were legislating or what it was that they were prosecuting. So here we go again. As Ecclesiastes said in the Bible, there is nothing new under the sun. And we just keep fighting the same battles again and again. Anybody here have any serious doubts that Dr. Bill Frist, Harvard educated, denies the theory of evolution? Harvard is not the academy that I thought it was and that Unitarians are so proud of were that to be the case. There is political cynicism, and political cynicism often works when people are frightened. And I'll talk in a little bit about why it is and why it makes sense today that people are frightened and are grabbing on to anything that seems to be sure and certain. The great Unitarian minister and speaker and human being, Stephen Fritchman, thundered one day, "Every jellyfish needs a rock to cling to." And before Chris corrects that, the jellyfish don't cling to rocks. It's an image. It's a metaphor. It doesn't have to be scientifically true. Choir, raise your hands. The choir's got wings? They all got up there and sang, "You are the wind beneath my wings." If I'm a fundamentalist, I got to be looking for your wings. There's poetry as well as science as well as politics. I met evolution as a concept not simply when I saw the movie of Inherit the Wind, but I spent, I think probably a lot of my college writing the same term paper. I wrote it for English. I wrote it for comparative literature. I wrote it for geology. This was the crowning achievement of my life. My topic was the evolution of the concept of tragedy. And when my geology teacher and they made you take, in order so that you could be a well-rounded student and roll in whatever direction you were pushed, when they made me take a geology for poets class, and he said, geology and evolution applies to everything. I said, terrific. Literature too? He said, yeah. And I went, opening. And I wrote my term paper on the evolution of tragedy. And I think it's really my proudest moment that I got an A in geology for writing a lit paper, which incidentally I did turn into my master's thesis in philosophy. So it's been in biology, it's been in literature, it's been in geology, which leads me to believe that evolution is indeed a very valuable way of thinking and a metaphor. People object to it. Well, it's a theory. They don't know all of the intermediary steps. We can't explain this. We can't explain that. Some of that is not true. Some of the things that they say they can't explain, we can, but that's okay. Gravity is a theory, which is incompletely understood today. It was more incompletely understood 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and yet, even when no one had even the vaguest understanding of the mechanisms of gravity, most people knew not to step off of the cliff. You know, it was just one of the, well, it's only a theory, maybe I ought to try. Evolution is a theory that I think really in ways that are more powerful than Marxism as a metaphor for understanding how we can deal with the changes that go on in our personal lives, in our communities, in our larger communities, and in the world. One of the mistakes that people make about evolution is that people talk about evolution as if it were indeed from alpha to omega. Unbroken, straight line, all the way up until someday we reach this kind of platonic perfection in another dimension in the sky. But evolution, as most of us know, has a lot of dead ends. A lot of the animals didn't make it. They made some poor choices in their natural selection, and they selected themselves with some traits that were not survival efficient. Ideas, societies, communities, even thinking can go through very similar processes. My favorite example of evolution having run amok, and its metaphor for a military-industrial complex is so clear that I'll give it away in the beginning, is the saber-toothed tiger. The saber-toothed tiger was this wonderful animal that was fleet of foot, but it just needed a little help in defending itself. And so those saber-toothed tigers tended to survive and tended to mate conspicuously. That's my Father's Day tie-in, by the way. That's about it. Managed to mate conspicuously that had saber teeth. It was a great advantage. But at some point, those things that were survival efficient in the growing of those sabers turned back in on the tigers. And they became not offensive weapons, but they became a drain of energy, of weight, and they were no longer survival efficient, and that's why we visit them in skeleton form, and there aren't any saber-toothed tigers around. Those survival-efficient traits turned in on themselves and became gross liabilities in a new world. I think we see in the mechanisms of evolution very interesting parallels to how we as human beings live and develop. And often it's not in a straight line from simple to complex to some kind of perfection. I am reminded from time to time by either children or spouse that I have not yet reached perfection. The grandchildren still think I'm perfect, and that's really whole part of the process, really, is that we go from simple to complex to very complex, and then things kind of start to get simple again, where all of a sudden, I mean, I really miss my younger days when I knew everything. And I miss my younger days when I could understand everything. And now I realize to a much greater extent than I ever did before the encyclopedic scope of my ignorance. And that the world out there is just so much more complicated than I anticipated it being. And so I have some tendencies to kind of want to simplify. I look at ballot initiatives and go, oh my dear God, what does that mean? And I listen to the spin people and I go, I have no idea, so I'm going to just vote against the one that seems the dumbest and the most corrupt, but not necessarily based on real understanding. I think this is a pretty familiar pattern to a lot of people. We talk about democracy, and we are a representational democracy. Of course, who the government represents is something that we might talk about on Tuesday night. But they represent somebody, probably no one in this room, but they represent somebody. But democracy grows from an idea that's really relatively simple. Let's let the people get a voice in this. And then things get complicated. And so, all right, we need some professionals out there whom we'll pick. And then it gets much too complicated, and we say, I can't understand all this stuff. Let's go for some simple answers. And God says on that sixth day, let there be Fox News. So that we have a sense at some point where life gets complicated, and we want to have easy and kind of fundamentalistic, both politically and scientifically, or biblically, answers. Because the complexity of the world, being more than we can contain, makes us want to just go for something that is easier, that we can get our hands and our minds around. There's another metaphor I want to use today, beside the saber-toothed tiger, and that's the Gordian knot. The Gordian knot that Alexander encountered, where people had been challenged for years to untie this knot, and then they would understand how it was that you could run Persia. Well, okay. So Alexander takes out his sword, and he just slices through it, kind of cutting to the chase, as it were, and he doesn't bother doing what they expected him to do. He cuts through the knot. That is something that, as a young person, I really responded to socially. In my own personal evolution, life started out being really simple, then got complex, and then in my late teens and early 20s, the idea of cutting through that Gordian knot, getting rid of the past folly, but also wisdom of the past that had been engaged in a process, seemed like a wonderful idea. It's one of those passionate stages that young people tend to go through and should go through. But then all of a sudden, or maybe not all of a sudden, maybe over a period of time, the wisdom of having knotty problems, that's K-N-O, not N-A-U-G-H-T-Y, knotty problems are different, but just as interesting, maybe more interesting, but knotty problems became not some challenge to be cut through again and to be discarded easily and to shrug off the history and the complexity, but something to be understood, something to be engaged with. If I were to make this into a political sermon, which it is not, not wanting to risk our 501c3, I would say that there are some administration figures who want to cut through a Gordian knot and think that there are simple solutions to complex, interwoven, knotted up problems of history, of family, of tribe, of religion, of tradition, and you can cut through them, but you don't solve the problem because the knots remain. They are just divided in half, and they are now just wounded and usually kind of, to mix the metaphor, angry knots, which are nothing really that you want to be dealing with. I think that this kind of evolutionary sense that we have of from alpha to omega, from simplicity to complexity and eventually perfection, is not true. That we have an evolution in our societies, in our lives, in our institutions that go from simplicity to complexity, and then they come back into a form of simplicity, that we long to have understanding again and easy answers and not to have all of the challenges of nuance. We want it's true or it's false, it's black, it's white, it's good, it's bad. It's whatever those simple bifurcations that we make about people and governments and religions, and it is, in my experience, seldom that simple. If I can get biblical for only a moment or two, one of the very interesting stories this week was Stephen Hawking, who probably knows more about life, the universe, and everything than anybody else alive. Life, the universe, and everything. Restaurant at the end of the Adams. Charlie, I expected better from you. It's his daughter's favorite four-book trilogy. Again, four-book trilogies of The Wind Beneath the Choir's Wings. But ever since Adams died, Hawking has been the go-to guy on the origins of the universe, on where we came from and where we're going. And he came out with something interesting this week, which was he thinks we ought to all go into outer space. Well, no. He thinks that humanity's future is in outer space. And a lot of people have said from time to time, well, that's a completely ridiculous idea. I heard commentators laughing at him, which seems to me to be a mistake of arrogance that's unparalleled, since he's usually the smartest guy in the room. And so it's an idea that you take seriously, because his point was, we are in a very limited ecosystem. We can be, as George Carlin said, shrugged off of this earth, and earth will never know the difference. At some point, whether or not you've seen the Al Gore movie, the earth can become superheated or super chilled. An Ebola type virus could run through the world and wipe everybody out, or a prion virus, well, it's not a virus, but a prion could run through the world and poison all of us. And he's saying the only safety for humanity is to dream of the stars and to someday go out there. And it's such an interesting idea in terms of evolution and in terms of vision. He raises in his own physics the question, the ultimate religious and scientific question of where do we come from, another Father's Day tie-in, and where are we going? The Father's Day tie-in, and that is, but we don't know where we're going, but being guys, we won't ask directions. But where have we come from? Why is there something when there could have been nothing? Why is there a universe? And is there enough dark matter out there to hold this whole creation together so that we go from the simplicity of the Big Bang to the creation of elements, of stars, of life, and then entropy wins and the universe becomes simple again and starts to cool down and you go through this kind of evolution this way as opposed to that way. Now, I don't know the answers. And even Hawking doesn't know the answer. But when he brings up the point of where we came from, where we are going, and why we might want to look at other worlds and other planets, it seems to me to bring us face to face with a saber-toothed tiger and to make us ask a question of ourselves. We live in a very limited ecosystem. One of the arguments from design theologies is that human beings must be divinely created because it can't be an accident. If the Earth were just a couple million miles further away, we'd be so cold, we'd freeze to death and we wouldn't be here. If it were a couple million miles closer, we would burn to death and we wouldn't be here. We can't really live on Venus, which is too hot, or Mars, which is too cold. So this is the perfect hospitable place for us. But life is much more complicated than that. There are bacteria living in ammonia. There are bacteria that don't need oxygen. There are bacteria, and now apparently even other more complex animals, living in boiling steam vents at the bottom of the ocean. There is life in the water, life in the ice, life really in the boiling fire. And we live in a very narrow range. We compensate for that because we have clothes that can warm us when it's cold and sometimes cool us, we can hope, when it's warm. We have machines that let us live all over the planet, but we are a very narrow life form, and we are a very delicate life form. And if humanity is going to survive, we've got to use our big brains for something other than big weapons. There's a saying, and with so many sayings, when you think about them, they're nonsense. There's a saying that to me is particularly nonsensical in this vein. It says, you gotta dance with the one what brung you. Well, if we dance with the DNA what brung us from the jungle, from the pampas, across Europe and through all of the internecine wars, through all of the ways that we divide ourselves from each other, through all of the anger and all of the violence and the adrenaline, epinephrine rush that we have of anger and of rage, if we dance with the one what brung us, it is a dance of doom. What evolution calls on us to do uniquely is to understand the difference between a human being and a saber-toothed tiger or a woolly mammoth or a bacterium. And that is that we have choices. We have the ability to understand. We have the ability to compensate. We have the possibilities of having real vision and working towards those visions. And whether it's in outer space or whether it's here, whether it is on the dimension of the earth where most of us would put the better tomorrow, or in a sky realm where many religions focus it, is to understand those as real challenges that whether you put it today, or whether you put it here in a material world, or up there in a immaterial world, what we do today makes a difference in what tomorrow is. What we understand today, whether or not we go for the fear is against the hope. Whether or not we just say, let it be simple because it's too confusing for my brain. Let the government do it. Let the press do it. Let a preacher tell me what it's all about. The hard challenge is living with a Gordian knot and working at untying the puzzle to understand it so that we can learn something to make a difference. I understand why it is that we evolve or devolve towards something that is simple. Life is very frightening. I understand why politicians can play the evolution card again, because people are frightened. And when we are frightened, when we feel insecure, when there seem to be no eternal verities, but only changing fashion, as human beings, we want a rock to cling to. We want something that is just by God true yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And what is true? Yesterday, today, and in any foreseeable near-term tomorrow is we have immense power to understand, to change the course of evolution, to call on, in theological language, as Jesse Jackson said, our better angels, our rational side, in order to make choices that make life on this earth not only possible, but desirable. We are not a powerless or victim people. We are people with immense power to change the course of evolution by what we do and by what we don't do. What we may not do is continue without thinking, just to dance with what brung us to this moment. But this moment is, last tie-in to Father's Day, pregnant with every possibility, and it's up to us.